This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Reese Roth, director of the Center for Sustainable Infrastructure at the Evergreen State College. Reese Roth is here to tell us about water infrastructure in the Pacific Northwest and to discuss the report, A Northwest Vision for 2040 Water Infrastructure, Innovative Pathways, Smarter Spending, Better Outcomes, co-authored with Patrick Mazza. Welcome.
Thank you, Diane.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the Center for Sustainable Infrastructure at the Evergreen State College?
Yeah, the center's really focused on helping Oregon and Washington to become national hotbeds for sustainable infrastructure innovation and to advance a new paradigm and practice and investment discipline for how we spend billions and billions of dollars in the Northwest on infrastructure systems, transportation systems, energy systems, water-related systems, waste management systems, so we can get much better outcomes for our community in terms of sustainability, resilience, affordability, equity.
What is the current condition of our water infrastructure in the Pacific Northwest?
It varies. I mean, we are all living and enjoying a tremendous legacy of water infrastructure systems. By that, I mean water supply, wastewater treatment, stormwater management, flood control, tremendous legacy that have been passed on from previous generations that are still functioning and operational. In a lot of cases, those systems are getting very old and increasingly prone to disruption. And we all pretty much take our infrastructure for granted, and we're a bit oblivious to all these pipes and pumps and treatment plants running throughout our communities, but they provide incredibly valuable services. And so if they get decayed to the point that they start to break down, creates real problems for our day-to-day lives.
Who or what groups or agencies are responsible for water infrastructure?
Again, that varies a lot. All our infrastructure systems, we tend to manage in silos with a different utility or agency managing electricity, managing transportation, managing water supply, wastewater, stormwater. We really advocate, looking at how we can manage community infrastructure more as whole systems and start to bridge the gaps between silos. But in Seattle, for instance, you have Seattle Public Utilities that manages the water supply and the stormwater management. And King County Wastewater Treatment is sort of the lead agency for wastewater treatment. In the future, a lot of those services can be provided through more intimate cooperation between those agencies.
What are the key challenges for our region's water infrastructure?
Well, we have a number of challenges. I think the aging infrastructure, water main breaks, sewage plant overflows, stormwater, are big challenges. At the same time, we overlay the threat of Cascadia subduction zone earthquakes, which could be borderline catastrophic potentially for our water infrastructure, which could have a huge effect on people. And climate disruption, the climate change that's coming. Really, we've built these water infrastructure systems based on an assumption of a stationary climate. But if that climate changes, and it does appear to be changing, those systems are not going to be able to handle the greater extreme events that we're talking about. If we're designing a stormwater system or a wastewater collection system for a 50-year storm to be able to handle that, and that happens every 5 years, or we get a 500-year storm, that's going to overwhelm our existing infrastructure. Big challenge. We also have a retirement wave coming to all our infrastructure sectors. So the graying of that workforce, we have an increasingly urgent challenge to attract and inspire and equip a new generation of infrastructure workers and leaders to the field.
To what extent does population growth pose problems for our water infrastructure?
It really does. In communities that are growing rapidly like this one, and the infrastructure has been basically designed for a certain level of population, it's a definite challenge for planners and infrastructure decision makers to figure out how to build the capacity to accommodate more people, consuming more water, discharging more wastewater, maybe paving more surface area, creating more stormwater challenges. That's real tough. But through smart decision making, that kind of population growth, we can handle it. It's just a real challenge. And I think we can't understate what an amazing job our water infrastructure leaders and planners and workers have been doing for decades. And not an easy job. They're doing heroic work, and it's of tremendous import to the community, even though we don't really think about, you know, we just flush the toilet, we turn on the shower, turn on the tap, don't give it much of a thought, but they're doing really important work.
What is the goal or purpose of your report, A Northwest Vision for 2040 Water Infrastructure?
You know, I went out and I sat down and talked with 40 utility leaders, advocates for more resilient and sustainable infrastructure, equity advocates, regulators, public health regulators. And the question that I asked them to step back from their very busy day-to-day, week-to-week work plans and look at the big picture. So the design question for this report was really, how can Oregon and Washington develop one of the world's most sustainable, resilient, and affordable and integrated water infrastructure systems spanning water supply, wastewater treatment, and stormwater management by 2040? So look out 25 years, all the changes in technology, in best practices, demographics, consumption patterns. How do we really rethink these? Because every time we invest in infrastructure facilities, these are multi-decadal investments. So the idea is to look out 25 years and say, what kind of system do we want to have in 25 years? How's that going to operate? And then we can kind of screen our near-term investments. If we can get a shared vision for how this can work in 2040, then we can look at our year-to-year investments and say, is that getting us there or is that taking us somewhere else?
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Reese Roth, Director of the Center for Sustainable Infrastructure at the Evergreen State College. Our topic is water infrastructure in the Pacific Northwest. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. Before we go into more detail, would you give a brief overview of your key findings?
Key findings. You know, we're already spending quite a bit of money to operate, maintain, refurbish, and sustain our critical water supply, wastewater, and stormwater infrastructure. We're spending north of $3 billion a year in Oregon and Washington. So a key need, a key challenge is how do we get as smart as possible? How do we get smarter spending for better outcomes that really can optimize the long-term community value that are generated from these investments? We're using public money for public benefit. How do we really optimize that spending? And our utilities are critically important. We form them to invest on all our behalf. These are some of the biggest capital investments that we make together as a community. And so our utilities are vitally important and great institutions, but they face a lot of really important challenges. And our infrastructure's vulnerable. Earthquakes, climate change, aging infrastructure. We need to really invest in these systems and to really think about how we can invest in the smartest way possible. Fortunately, there's a new portfolio of 21st century solutions that we can invest in, but it's a new toolkit. And the civil engineer playbook that a lot of the folks in our utilities were trained in was really developed decades ago. So training people, training our institutions to be able to invest in this new portfolio is going to be a key challenge. So the report highlights the top five things that our utility leaders can do, top five things for policymakers to do, and really tries to rivet in conclusion on the actionable agenda to get smarter and better outcomes.
Let's now go into detail about some specific solutions you propose to ensure that our water infrastructure is adequate in the future. What are some solutions to make our water infrastructure more resilient?
You know, part of this new solutions portfolio, let me highlight three elements of it. One, there are what we call micro-infrastructure technologies available, where at the level of a building or a district or a larger site, we can actually capture rainfall, be able to utilize it on-site, and then process the wastewater that's generated after we use it and really manage the stormwater at the building site or at the neighborhood site in a way that is really different than the centralized system with tens and hundreds of miles of pipe, pumps to move that water, and treatment stations that are located far away. So nesting microinfrastructure into the existing system in ways that complement and help take the burden off our legacy system is one key solution. Another is really the high tech, the technologies, sensor technology, camera technologies that can kind of give you visibility inside the pipes and show if a pipe is rusting or corroding or if it's getting clogged with debris. Before, we had to pretty much wait until it broke or overflowed, and then we'd realize there's a problem because this stuff's underground and basically invisible. But now we can have eyes inside our infrastructure in ways that we didn't have before, and we can manage that from a central location and send crews out to exactly where they're needed. Green infrastructure is the third big area of solution innovation, and essentially that means that we can deploy plants, rich soils, trees, and restore natural habitat and bring that green into our communities in ways that help us manage rainfall, manage stormwater, help us process wastewater, provide all sorts of services for our legacy infrastructure in ways that save money and also bring a lot of community benefit by bringing green and bringing beauty into our communities.
Would you focus also on the resilience that would be needed in terms of an earthquake? If we got the big number 9 earthquake, what would it actually do to our water system?
Well, you know, there's an analysis for Snohomish, King, and I believe Pierce County that found that this is the biggest area of vulnerability and that in the event of one of those big earthquakes, it would take potentially a week to 30 days to bring back water supply service to 90% of the population. And even then, another 10% of people would be without water service. But that could be incredibly disruptive. I remember my earthquake preparedness messages that I received were, you know, make sure you got 2 to 3 days worth of water in your house in event of an earthquake. But that may well not be even close to enough to what we need in the event of one of these large earthquakes.
So how can the water system be changed to handle that level of disruption?
You know, I don't think we totally have the answer to that, but one example might be that in every local elementary school, we site a well that is there to tap in the event of an earthquake. And they're pretty resistant to earthquake disruption. But at least that would give each neighborhood access to water in the event of an earthquake. And that could be actually really cost effective compared to other kinds of alternatives for trying to guarantee water supply in the event of such a disruptive, destructive event.
One of the new innovative solutions you speak about in your report is creating net water positive buildings that capture, treat, and recycle water on site. Mm-hmm. Would you say more about the net water positive buildings and their potential role?
You know, the green building movement is an incredibly dynamic and influential movement. Over the last couple decades, it's transformed a lot of how commercial buildings are built around the world. Seattle is one of the epicenters of innovation around green buildings. And a lot of the focus up till now has been around net zero or net positive energy buildings. But there's technology developed now and on the market to actually have net zero water, where a tremendous amount of water is captured on site from the rainfall. It's stored, it's cleaned up enough to use for toilets and all the different uses you might have in a commercial building. You've managed the stormwater after the water is used and use it very efficiently. There's technology to process it and purify it on site and then release it in a way that manages and reduces stormwater challenges. So probably the world's most sustainable building is the Bullitt Center right here in Seattle. And it is a shining beacon for what's possible in terms of net zero water management.
You had mentioned smart devices where you could actually monitor what's going on in the water infrastructure. To what extent are these smart devices currently being used?
They're increasingly being used. The technology is very available, but there's still, I'd say, probably the majority of our water infrastructure, we're still sort of flying blind. in most communities. So there's a tremendous need to help infrastructure planners and decision makers and executives to develop their strategy for systematically beginning to integrate these smart devices and sensors and cameras into their infrastructure systems.
How much momentum is there to cause this to come about?
There's a lot of momentum. There is a lot of momentum. And the cost of sensor technology and camera technology, as you know, is just dropping continuously. And the capabilities are improving. And part of the reason that we really need to bring new workers and leaders into our infrastructure sector is because young people are much more comfortable with smart devices, smart technology, and it's just more part of their milieu and their day-to-day lives. So they're going to be much more capable of figuring out how to integrate these smart technologies into these systems, perhaps, than the gray hairs like me that that fumble around with this stuff.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Reese Roth, Director of the Center for Sustainable Infrastructure at the Evergreen State College. Our topic is water infrastructure in the Pacific Northwest. How can utilities collaborate with customers for better water infrastructure?
You know, a lot of interesting technical capabilities are coming to people's homes where they can actually, in an automated way, say, I would like to use water as efficiently as possible. I'd like to adjust my demand, my flexible demand, so that it can work well with the utility. For example, if demand is peaking on the system at 6 o'clock when everybody gets home from work and that creates a challenge for the utility, if I can bump, you know, my dishwashing to 9 o'clock and this device will handle that and I don't even have to think about it and it doesn't disrupt my life at all, I'm more than happy to do that, especially if my utility will pay me for doing that. So there's all sorts of interactive capabilities that can be managed through a smart app on your phone, a smart app at the home level, to allow customers to be collaborative partners with utilities and for utilities to pay customers for that service that customers are providing. Because it can be cost effective for the utility to simply work with customers rather than building bigger pipes, bigger pumps, bigger treatment plants, bigger sources of water supply all the time.
Where will the money come from to provide the robust water infrastructure that we need for 2040?
Well, we are spending currently north of $3 billion a year on particularly water supply and wastewater infrastructure, and even more on stormwater in Oregon and Washington. So that's a large flow of money that we're paying through our water rates. So step one is really to rethink that spending to optimize the value and benefit long-term to the larger system. But it's hard to get your arms around exactly what the need is beyond existing resources, but the National Infrastructure Advisory Council estimates nationally it's somewhere between $400 billion and $1 trillion beyond existing spending is what we need to really modernize and ensure that this water infrastructure is performing properly. So there is a large amount of additional resources that we will probably need to secure in addition to rethinking our existing spending. So that could come from federal investment. That could come from state investment. There may be ways to tap private investment in ways that serve the public interest. So we need to get smart about all three of those areas for bringing additional resources to the table.
How has federal help for water infrastructure changed over time?
You know, it was very, very strong in the 60s, 1970s in particular. There was a tremendous amount of funding that went out to particularly to help build wastewater treatment capacity in communities large and small. A lot of times the feds would pay 90% or more of the cost. That has dropped off precipitously. And a lot of the smaller and suburban communities have infrastructure systems that are maybe too big for them to afford to pay for from existing ratepayers, and those systems are now, I think 1970s, we're talking 40 years later, that's pretty much the design life of a lot of these facilities. And so they're needing to be either dramatically refurbished, replaced. And so, especially again for the smaller and suburban communities, a lot of them face some real serious challenges because they haven't had the resources and haven't been setting aside funds over the last 40 years for the rebuilding when that bill came due. So that's a real problem.
Well, you've been alluding to this, but what would Northwest water infrastructure look like in 2040 if your proposed solutions are implemented? And how would it be better than today?
We'll have smart technology infused throughout these systems. We'll be able to very precisely pinpoint where problems on the system are and send crews out to deal with those systems. We'll have restored watersheds, the natural habitat of watersheds. We'll have rebuilt the wetland capacity of our natural systems. We'll have brought a lot of green into our communities, and so that nature will be providing a tremendous amount of service to our water infrastructure systems. We'll have these micro-infrastructure building-level systems to capture and process and purify and manage water nested into the larger systems. So it won't just be a very centralized system. It'll be a more diverse system with systems at various scales. We'll diversify our water supplies so that we're relying much more on recycled, purified water that we've captured and reused and cleaned up. We'll have more diverse sources, so we're not just dependent on one source far away that's piped hundreds of miles that in an earthquake, if that gets disrupted, we'll have a problem. So there's a number of fronts where we'll make significant progress and have a much more sustainable, resilient, and really affordable water infrastructure.
What are the key barriers in meeting water infrastructure goals for 2040?
You know, capacity is a key part of it. And we have a big retirement wave coming to all our infrastructure agencies and utilities. And we have a new portfolio of solutions and a new paradigm and investment discipline that our current leaders are not trained in. So we really need to inspire and attract this new generation of infrastructure. And these are great jobs. These are quality, family-supporting jobs. And so I really encourage young people to be thinking about infrastructure and water infrastructure as a career opportunity. But it's a really important way that you can make a tangible contribution to your community at the same time as you support families.
What additional barriers stand in the way of meeting water infrastructure goals for 2040?
That sort of capacity to embrace the new processes and opportunities, figuring out how to finance, and particularly where communities haven't been setting aside the resources to replace this legacy infrastructure, which is getting very old, how to really invest the flow of billions of dollars that we're spending each year, how to sort of redirect that and rethink that so that we're getting long-term community value and building that kind of optimal system that we want, looking 25 years out. So it's always difficult to sort of change habitual practices. And I think our infrastructure leaders and investors and managers have been doing a terrific, tremendous, unsung job. And they're going to need to change how they're doing business year to year going forward. So both those things are true.
Would you highlight the advantages of having a more distributed water infrastructure system rather than centralized?
Well, it can be more efficient. It takes a lot of energy to pump water around and move it long distances as we have in our legacy and our traditional infrastructure systems. Those long networks of pipe that are sending water and wastewater and stormwater tens of miles, hundreds of miles are vulnerable to catastrophic earthquakes. It's difficult to really anticipate where water main breaks and other problems are going to be when you have that sprawling of a infrastructure system with pipes underground. So in a lot of ways, we're flying blind and sort of waiting for breakdowns to happen and trying to respond in an emergency sort of way. I think with distributed infrastructure systems, we'll be managing a lot more of the flows in a localized way and combine that with these kind of sensor camera visibility into the systems, we'll be able to have a more resilient system that can also be more affordable because the cost of distributed systems can be less than the centralized systems.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Really, I think we have a tremendous opportunity, particularly in the Pacific Northwest, to pioneer the future of water infrastructure globally and to do it in ways that will yield all sorts of benefits for our communities in terms of a better environment, in terms of less vulnerability to catastrophic breakdowns, and in terms of economic development and pathways out of poverty and family-supporting jobs. We have an innovation orientation in the Northwest, so we're very capable of pioneering this new future. And it's really about smarter spending to get better outcomes for the community for the longer term.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Reese.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You were just listening to Reese Roth, Director of the Center for Sustainable Infrastructure at the Evergreen State College. For more information, check on the web at evergreen.edu/CSI. Again, evergreen.edu/CSI. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and on kexp.org.